Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, all, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I am really delighted to welcome to the show peak performance coach, business strategist, leadership consultant, and technology entrepreneur, Travis Robertson. All I had to hear was technology. He had me at technology. Travis has been entertaining and educating audiences on marketing, business growth, team performance, leadership, and social media for more than a decade. And he also offers a more personal message, don't settle, period, don't settle. He believes that too many people go through life living for weekends or vacations, and we're going to talk about that because there's a lot of area in there. Travis also equips people with the tools and the motivation to build lives and impact others and leave a legacy. He's coached executives with Fortune 500 companies and small startups and everything in between. His goal is to help entrepreneurs and small business owners create businesses that they don't want to escape from. He wants you to be excited when you wake up and you hit that floor running and the devil says, oh, they're awake. That's what Travis wants you to live your life like. So good morning, Travis. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here.
Oh, good morning, Denise. I'm excited to be here. This is something I've been looking forward to for a couple of weeks now.
Oh, thank you. That is so sweet. Listen, before I get, and I mean that too, by the way, I wasn't just being sugary there. Before we get too deep into the, I have a ton of questions for you. Can you tell people a little bit about yourself and where they can find you on the web?
Yeah, I'm online at travisrobertson.com. That's my website, and I was hoping to have the new design up before this call, but it's a little bit behind schedule, which they typically are, but you can find out about me there. And like Denise said, I'm a peak performance coach, I'm a business strategist, and what I really love to do is I love to help people design and build and create and launch and grow teams and businesses that really help, that fit into their lifestyle. Because I think too many people, like you said, they work for the weekends. They they hate their jobs. They hate their careers. And a lot of business owners that I talk to truthfully hate their business because they got into it under false precepts of what it was going to be. They assumed that, oh, you know, I hate my job, so I'm going to go out on my own and life is going to be great. And you realize that actually I'm working more. I make less money.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't working out like I thought it was going to work out. And so how do you shift? How do you go from being, you know, as Michael Gerber once wrote, the tactician in the business to actually being the owner of the business? And so I do a lot of stuff with helping people make that transition and running a business, not just creating a job where they work more and make less.
Right. It's working in your business as opposed on your business, or on your business as opposed in your business. They're two distinctions, aren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely, and most people work in their business, and look, I fall prey to that too. I think when you run a business, it can be so easy to get stuck in the weeds, and it can be one of those things where the fires are going and the clients are upset or something's happening, and it can get really easy to just get stuck in the weeds and to forget that, wait a minute, I need to back out of this for just a second, focus on my business. Where is it going? What am I doing to promote its growth? What am I doing to actually promote getting myself out of the weeds and staying out of the weeds so that I can do what I do best, which is think about where the business needs to go, lead the team that's going to get us there, and I can be the one, you know, directing the charge, not the one fighting every single battle that comes up.
I know, and you said something so important there, because people, I did this. I was guilty of this when I first started out. Just because I could do everything didn't mean that I should. And I did,
oh,
and
gosh.
I just about half killed myself.
Oh, you're right.
So it's
right.
Hard to give up that kind of control. If you're like me, and I rather suspect you are, you're a bit of a control freak. It's our baby. We birthed it. We want to raise it. It's hard to let other people kind of come in and do stuff that you know you can do better. I mean, how do you coach people to get out of that mindset?
Boy, you're right about that. And I am a control freak. And it's,
I knew it.
You don't go into business for yourself unless on some level you're a bit of a control freak. And,
right.
And you know, especially if you've worked for other people, you sit there and you're in your quote-unquote day job, and you're watching everybody else screw up things that you think you could do better. So you kind of like, oh, I could run a business better than this idiot, or
right.
This moron doesn't know what they're talking about. And so there is a little bit of a control freak, a confidence that sometimes borders on arrogance. And so you have to, and then it's the most humbling thing in the world when you actually launch your business and you're like, wow, this is actually a lot harder from the outside than it looks. Because what happens is we get focused on the small decisions that people are making, and we have no idea all the hundreds of thousands of decisions and obstacles that they're facing on the backside of those decisions that we don't see until we actually start a business. And then we're like, wow, I have to keep books. What, you know, I'm not a bookkeeper.
What do you mean the IRS?
You know,
what?
Yeah. How do I pull my taxes out? I mean, all the different things that you really don't think about. You know, like, I don't get to keep everything I make. Wow, that's a novel idea.
That sucks when I first found that out.
Yeah, and so
that
what
hurts
happens
your feelings.
Is, and it really, so to answer your question, how do I coach people to overcome this, is that part of what I do is I have to help them understand what it took a long time for me to understand, which is that in reality, I can't do it better than everybody else. And the more I think that I can, the worse I actually get at running my business. The more in the weeds I get, the more I try and control everything, the less the business grows, the more stifled it becomes. Because John Maxwell has a phenomenal, who's a great leadership coach. What he talks about is something called the law of the lid. The law of the lid is that the leader of an organization is the lid of that organization. The lower the lid, the smaller the business is going to grow. The organization can only grow as much as the leader is willing to grow themselves and willing to allow others to grow underneath them and lift the organization up. And so what I really have to help people understand is that your time is extremely valuable. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do it. And a great example of this is I have a tech background. I've designed, built, programmed, created incredible websites, massive websites, but right now I've got a company that I've hired and paying good money to basically build my new website design and build my new and everything that they're doing. I have to be very careful to not step in and try and take control over and go, wait a minute, I'm paying them because I trust that they know what they're doing. They're professionals. And yes, I was too, but I'm not anymore. I'm a business owner, and I have to be willing to let them do it and be comfortable offering feedback, offering advice, but saying, you know what, go do what it is you do best. And the more freedom I give them, truthfully, the better they end up doing.
Well, yeah, because
but
they can
the
let their creativity flow, and they're excited about working with you.
Yeah, and the more I try and control the process, the more frustrated they become, and as they should be. Because I'm nitpicking, and it's like, wait a minute, for every minute that I'm nitpicking, I'm not growing my business.
Good point. Very good point. You know, I have a similar situation. I'm a web developer, I'm a virtual assistant, an online business manager, and I'm building what I'm calling Denise Griffith's Mastermind. And I did exactly what you did. I hired somebody to build this site for me. I can do it all by myself. But I'm too close to it. I don't have time. And I finally just, you know, threw in the towel, literally, and said, I'm hiring somebody. And I have to say, I was very embarrassed by that until the next thought that popped into my head, because this conversation took place in about 2 minutes internally. I was like, Denise, really? You're throwing in the towel? You can't do this on your own? The second thing was, but I'm always preaching to people that you need to grow a team. You need to get out of your own way. So I sat on the fence and I went, whoop, and I jumped over on the other side.
So, well,
so I
know
what you're talking about.
One of the companies that we interviewed to do this, because one of the members of my team, she is a former project manager for a web design company. So she's perfectly capable of running this project. And so I've really actually even internally turned it over to her to interface for the most part with the web design company. So I'm actually two levels removed from the project. And one of the companies that we were interviewing, it was really quite funny. He goes, well, given your background, why aren't you doing this yourself? And I had to go, well, that's a really good question, and here's why. And it was, like you said, it was kind of a little bit embarrassing. It's like, it was almost like he was saying, really, maybe you're just not that good. And it's like, no, I was actually really good at this. I was really good at this. And so you have to get over the little ego thing. And at the same time, one of the people that I look at that I think does this absolutely the best is Richard Branson. Richard Branson, I've seen him interviewed before, and somebody asked him, what is the secret to your success? And he said, I couldn't even graduate high school, basically, because he was illiterate.
He
was dyslexic, sorry.
Right.
It's 9 a.m. over here, so I'm still waking up. My coffee is still kicking in. But so he's dyslexic, and which meant that he had to delegate his reading of things to a lot of people. He said, I couldn't read fast enough to start making decisions, so he was having people read to him. And he said, when you learn very early on, when you have a weakness that is glaringly bad at this, that you have to become really good at trusting other people to do what they do best. And he said, the number one reason I've grown to be as successful as I am is because I've become a master delegator. I trust people to do what they do best. I hire solid people and turn them loose. And I thought, you know what? If a dyslexic high school dropout can become a billionaire, what's my excuse?
There you go. Yeah.
And
your conversation was much more detailed than mine. Mine, I just went, yeah, we're done.
I have to reason with myself a little bit. Like sometimes I have to mentally, kick myself in the head
to get
myself on board. So dialogues can tend to be a little challenging with myself.
Well, I'm willing to guess that, like me, you can play both sides of the fence and do it with glee.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. I get into arguments with myself, and after a while, I'm laughing because I'm thinking, you might have, should have, could have been an attorney, except you would hate yourself.
My wife tells me that all the time. She's like, you make a great attorney. And that's when we're in the middle of an argument, so it's not generally a compliment.
No, it's not. Trust me, been there. But I love that idea, and he's right. I met some years ago a very, very successful man here where I live, and he was a Cuban immigrant. And he wound up, before he was 30, owning several very large businesses. One is down by the port of New Iberia, and I remember him telling me that he never did learn to type, and he almost flunked his master's, his business degree. They were going to fail him because he wouldn't type. And he finally told him, he said, look, I don't need to know this. I need to know other things. I will hire people to type for me. And I thought, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get that.
I had a mentor of mine who, just a quick story, I had a mentor of mine who, when I was first starting out in the tech field, he wasn't educated in the sense that, I don't even think he went to college, I think he dropped out of college, and he was talking about his mentor who ran a very, very successful, $100 million plus dollar a year business in revenue, and what they did is copier sales. And he was asked one time, how did you build this? You don't even have a business degree, or you don't even have an MBA.
Right.
And the guy responds back. He goes, yeah, I actually have 30 MBAs. And the guy goes, what do you mean you have 30 MBAs? He goes, there's an MBA, there's an MBA, there's an MBA. And he goes, they're all working for me. I've got 30 MBAs. He goes, but none of them knew how to run a business and do sales like I could.
He's the rainmaker.
He's the rainmaker. And at the end of the day, it's the person, it's not the most educated person in the room who wins. It's the person who can allocate resources in the best person at allocating resources that wins.
Exactly. So I know that you talk a lot about focusing less on what you do and more what you're becoming. And that's a slight segue there. So can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, when I talk with people who, and you hear this all the time as a coach, and especially when you're working with entrepreneurs or you're working with people who are kind of in those stages of life where they're looking at something going, I hate my job, but I don't know what it is that I'm supposed to do yet. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what I want to do with my life. And part of the reason that they're in this situation is because when you're in a position that you absolutely hate, where you hate your job, or you hate what it is that you're doing, or you hate your business, truthfully, whatever it is, you have such little creativity that you can't think creatively about where you're going. You can't. It's almost impossible to look at the future with any sort of optimism or excitement or hope for the future when your current situation is so miserable. And so what I encourage people to do is say, look, right now I don't want you to worry about where you're going. You're in a situation where first things first is we got to address your current situation. And in order to address your current situation, you have to focus on who you're becoming. And who you're becoming is the person that's either going to be wallowing in your current situation or going to be finding ways to fix your current situation. And so what happens is when things get difficult, one of the things that falls off for most people is personal development. What falls off is that focus on, wait a minute, am I becoming the type of person that's going to be able to fix this problem, that's going to be able to grow this business, that's going to be able to lead this business, or am I becoming the type of person that's just going to wallow in, you know, my current situation and not focus on my personal development and my personal growth? Because you can only, it's coming back to that John Maxwell law of the lid thing, is that you can only get to a level that your personal growth has allowed you to get to. So if you're the type of person that here's a great way, if your income is only $100,000, that's because you're only capable of earning $100,000 right now. Your personal level, your personal development, your growth has only gotten you to the point where $100,000 is all you can make. If it's $50,000, it's $50,000. If it's $250,000 and you've capped out there, it's because you're doing the same things that you did to get to $100,000 or to $250,000 and expecting that they're going to get you to $500,000 to whatever that next level. And the reality is it's not. There's a great book, I can't remember the author, but it's called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And what we realize is that we grow, and then we cap out, and we keep chugging away, we keep plugging away, we keep working away at the same things that we did to get us to that level without realizing that, wait a minute, I'm now capped out at this level, which means I have to change, I have to grow, I have to raise the personal bar so that I'm capable of handling whatever's going to be coming at the next level. So focus less on what you're doing sometimes and more on who am I becoming? Am I becoming the type of leader that's going to be able to run this business and grow this business, or am I becoming the type of leader who's really not even a leader at all and just a tactician in the business, and I may as well just go get a job for somebody else because I'm going to work less and make more? So always be looking at who it is that you're becoming on the inside, the type of person that you're becoming, that personal growth, that personal development. And if you're not changing, your situation's not going to change. You're not going to have the insight. You're not going to have the capacity to take on what's next. You've got to be growing. You've got to be changing. Right. You've got to be focusing first on you, second on what it is that you're going to do.
And Travis, I suspect that people are listening are saying, "Oh, okay, I can make that stretch." But then, do you find that they'll make that next step, that next little reach or growth spurt, and then they quit again? Because I do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and I'll tell you, the biggest reason is they get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know what we're really talking about are comfort zones. because look, if you're making $50,000 or $65,000 or $100,000, if you're at that cap level, whatever number that is, I don't care if you're capped at $1 million a year. If you're capped there, the reason is because you got comfortable. And you got to a situation where you looked at it and you're like, wow, I'm actually kind of good at this. But then what happens is when we're not growing, when we're not stretching, what we start to get is dissatisfied. Because what we were originally thinking was going to make us satisfied was the money, was the level of success. So, you know, most people go, oh, man, if I were making $1 million a year, I'd be happy. And I go, no, you wouldn't. I go, why wouldn't I be happy? Because at some point, the money's not going to be enough. It can't be about the money. It's got to be about your growth, your development. That's where we really find fulfillment, is in what it is that we're doing to grow ourselves and to turn around and help other people. That's it.
I agree. And, you know, you'll hear stories of people say, well, you know, let's use Richard Branson. You know, he's so wealthy. Why does he work so hard? Do you ever see the pure joy on that guy's face?
Oh,
he radiates just absolute joy. He loves what he does. And I'm willing to bet that he wakes up every day and goes, ah, I've got 45 new ideas. Which one should I work on today? Wait a second, I'll work on all 45. I've got people.
Yeah,
I bet you he does.
It's like, let's see, today do I want to go up into space or go deep diving on my submarines? Or do I want to, you know, he's always exploring. He's always doing something new and something that he finds passionate. And to me, there's a great story. I don't know if you know what Keller Williams Real Estate is. I'm not sure if they're in your area or not.
Keller Williams, they're all over California, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They're different areas, but California, they're pretty big here. And so what the guy who started the company is a guy by the name of Gary Keller, and he wrote a book called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And it's actually a phenomenal book for just any business owner. It's geared towards real estate agents, but it's actually just a great read. And one of the things he talks about is something that happened with a friend of his, that every year, kind of at the beginning of the year, him and another guy who is also successful sit down and make their goals for the upcoming year. And they kind of hold each other accountable to those goals. Well, Gary's setting bigger and bigger and bigger goals each and every year. And the guy straight up asks him and goes, Gary, why is it that you're working for money? And Gary goes, I'm not working for money. You're working for money. And the guy goes, no, what do you, like, look, I don't need to make more money. You know, I'm fine where I'm at. I'm not working for money. You're the one that keeps pushing it every year. And Gary goes, no, you don't understand. I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it to continue to grow and stretch and challenge myself. You're in it for the money because when you make a certain amount of money, you'll stop.
And you have to keep making that same amount of money.
Yeah, and your only benchmark for success is the money. My benchmark for success is what am I doing to further enrich the lives of my team, further grow the company so that I can help more people make a living, further grow the company so that I can help more people enjoy the dream of home ownership. That's what I'm about. The money's just a measuring stick of whether or not I'm being successful at helping people the way I want to help them. That's not why I'm in this. I'm in this to continue to grow and stretch because that means I have to grow and stretch myself. You're in it for the money because when you get to a level, you stop. That means that all you're looking at is that number.
I'm taking notes. I'm not silent. And I know I can listen to this later, but I'm taking notes right now. And that is such a good point, Travis. I mean, it really is because I've seen this. People will get to that million-dollar mark. Oh, I made my million. I've got my really nice house and my Range Rover. And you're right, there they settle. And but you can see the discontent because I'm like, oh, what's next? What's next? And it seems to be kind of a failing, I don't know, where you fail yourself. But I do want to make one observation, and I hope the audience is paying attention to this. You're referencing a lot of books. And I find that very successful people like you and a lot of the people that I've had the honor of interviewing, all of you are voracious readers, and I think that's so, so important. Do you mind talking about that?
Yes, I read my wife says I have an addiction to books, and the truth is I do. Like, and here, just a couple of anecdotes about this is, I go into a new city or a new town, and it's actually killing me that Borders went bankrupt, because one of the things that I would love to do is go explore different Borders books. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because Borders was such a great company, and they had some of the best bookstores. And so what I would do is I would go into a major city like Chicago or New York or Seattle, and one of the things that I would always do on that tour or when I was visiting a city is I would want to find, like, the coolest Borders in that particular city or town. And the reason is because everyone was different. Like, in New York, there's one that's, like, 3 or 4 stories, and I would just spend an hour or 2 hours just – and it's like, right in a cool little thing. It's got a coffee shop that overlooks Manhattan. It's just – it's really, really cool. And so I would just sit in there, have coffee, and I'd have a stack of books, and I'd just be reading books in the coffee shop, just experiencing a different city as a local. And it was just a fun way for me to do that. And so I practically cried when Borders went bankrupt, but everybody saw the writing on the wall with that one. And when we were moving, we moved not too long ago. I guess this was about 2 years ago. We were moving, and I had so many books that as the movers were packing up my books, one of them finally made a comment to me. He's like, "You have more books than anybody we've ever moved before." And I was like, "Yeah, I read a lot." And he goes, "Have you ever heard of a Kindle?" and because, I mean, they were tired. Literally, I think I probably had 20 boxes filled with books.
Well, that's all?
Kidding. That was after my wife made me get rid of some, honestly. And
you
can't
get rid of books? Oh, that's sacrilege. Did she get rid of her shoes?
No, she did.
I would have said, those shoes have to go.
There were some that were bad, so I was like, okay, I'll get rid of the bad ones. But the good ones I did keep. And I mean, it was really, really good. Now, I am getting better with reading books on a Kindle. It took me a long time because I like physical books. And I still buy certain books. But I do. I don't even know how many books I read. You know, there are people that are like, "Oh, I read 100 books a year." It's like, I just keep reading. So I don't know. And you know, I read a book on Millionaire Real Estate Agent. Why? Because I can learn something from just about anybody who's successful.
Exactly.
I'm not a real estate agent. I coach a lot of them, but, you know, and so it helped me to understand that. But it also, I was reading it going, wow, this is actually a really great idea for my business.
I do the same thing. I have close to 3,000 books.
Mm-hmm.
I gave up counting them, and I have 2 Kindles.
Yeah.
I have an addiction. You know, my name is Denise Griffiths. I am addicted to reading. But I started reading when I was 3.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Did you really?
Exactly. I did. I asked my mother years later, I said, "Who taught me to read?" She said, "Nobody." No, but the other side of that coin was that nobody told me I couldn't. So I just sat down and read. My parents had books all over the place, and you know, I was reading Guy de Maupassant, and I was reading Atlas Shrugged when I was 10 or 11. I mean, you know, I was reading things that I had no concept what they were, but I gained a heck of a vocabulary.
I'm sure, especially if you're reading Atlas
good
Shrugged
too.
At 10.
And I spells real good.
And you know what's funny? To me, I didn't develop my love of reading until later in life. Probably a little bit of my teenagers, because I wanted to be the next Warren Buffett by about 16, so I started reading the Wall Street Journal and reading investment books about 16. And so that kind of started the education by reading, and I realized how much I learned just by reading other people's books. And I was like, wow, okay, I can get an education without going to college. Not that I'm saying nobody should go to college. I just think college is overrated. But that's
and expensive.
A topic for different. Yeah. So, but you know, the majority of things that I've learned outside of college. Outside of formal education, or you know, school hard knocks sometimes.
Well, that's the best way. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I detested school, hated it. I've never been so bored in my
Me too.
Life. And
Me
I did
too.
Go back to college. I did get my computer science degree, and I am, you know, making it work with me. But by then, I knew what I wanted. And I was willing to knuckle down and do it. But school, oh, geez. I still kind of shudder when I think about it. It was awful.
Yeah,
it
I always say I wish I never went back and got my college degree. I ended up, I dropped out to go into the tech field in 1998. And so I started in the tech industry pretty early and started as a web application developer. And later on in my 20s, I was like, you know what, for myself, I really want to go back and get a degree. It was the dumbest waste of my money and my time that, like, I still don't use it. And it's like, why did I do this? It was just one of those foolish, fleeting thoughts where I felt like, you know what, I need a degree for some, at some point I'll be glad that I had it. And I look back and I go, no, not glad. I want the money back because I paid for it cash. Like, I paid, you know, it was a private university, and I was doing it because they had a great program, and it was, you know, it was geared towards working professionals, kind of like a Phoenix University, but it was near my house. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to do this, and spent a lot of money to do it, and got it done, and I was like, I don't even have my diploma.
I didn't go to my graduation.
I didn't either. You know, like, we haven't graduated. I'm like, nah, I got to work.
Yeah,
so it was so dumb, and my wife was so against it, and I was like, no, trust me. And she's like, well, if you want to do it, okay.
Right.
And then, you know, tens of thousands of dollars later, I'm like, yeah, that's a bad decision. So,
no, listen, I know. Out of my graduating class, I'm the only one that I know of that's working in my degree field. Now, that's pretty sad.
It, really?
One gal is working
is
at the Winn-Dixie as a checker. I mean, she bags groceries. It's very sad.
I don't
get that.
And especially right now, I mean, we have an over-educated workforce, which is kind of sounds counterintuitive, but it's true. We have too many people that feel too qualified to do jobs that need to be done.
You know, here's my attitude. If you are broke and you don't know where your mortgage payment is coming from or your car payment is coming from, take a look around your neighborhood. There are lawns that need to be mowed. Get out there and do it.
Absolutely.
And just
do what
you need to do.
I'm a big Dave Ramsey fan. I like what he says, you know, deliver pizzas if you need to. And and look, you can't be too proud when your mortgage payment needs to be made or when your food needs to be put on the table and you know, it's a debilitating thing to go through unemployment, and I watched my father-in-law do it, and I watched what happened to him, you know, just feeling like he got crushed and feeling like, you know, who am I, and the identity problems that came along with it. And it took him a few years to kind of figure out what was next and what was going on and where was he going from here. And it was a really hard thing to watch. But you know what? At the end of the day, he was still doing what he needed to do to put food on the table, as quote-unquote humbling or humiliating as it sometimes was. He did what he needed to do to provide for his family.
Right.
And at the same time, I watch people collect unemployment who are perfectly able-bodied and could do a lot of different things and who just let their pride get in the way. And to me, I look at it and go, you know what? There's a work ethic there that's lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, certain situations, I'm not going to, you know, paint a broad brush here, so I want to be careful, but there is this idea of saying, you know what, I'm going to do what I need to do to put food on the table, and I'm not going to sit around and wait for somebody else to fix my problem. And a lot of businesses get started in recessions from people who get laid off, who go unemployed for a particular reason, and truthfully, maybe through no fault of their own, but who look at it and go, I still am going to take responsibility for my situation. And I think too many people confuse fault and responsibility, and they go, well, it wasn't my fault. And I go, that's fine, but it's still your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may have gotten laid off. You may have gotten hit by a drunk driver and debilitated and disabled and whatever it is and lost an arm, lost a leg, you know, you can collect disability and all that other stuff, but I know people, and I've seen people coming back from Iraq, from Afghanistan, who've lost limbs through no fault of their own, but who are taking responsibility for the quality of the life that they have. There's a guy, I wish I could remember his name, a guy born with no arms, no legs, like, you can't even say, well, he signed up for the military, it's his own fault for signing. Like, you can't even trace it, any level of fault to this guy born with no arms and no legs. He's a world-renowned motivational speaker.
I know who that is. I can't remember his name, but yeah.
I know.
I've seen him.
He's absolutely fascinating to watch. And it's like, okay, what's my excuse? Like, not even putting it out to everybody else. What's my excuse? What excuse am I going to come up with that's so huge that I'm going to say, well, I just really couldn't make it happen because of, you know, some lame thing that I'm coming up with. And then here's this guy born, no arms, no legs, and he competes in the, you know, Paralympics, and he travels around, and he, you know, speaks on stages, and he's able to move himself around. And, yeah, he's got help. But, you know, at the end of the day, he wasn't sitting there going, well, woe's me, I have no arms and no legs. He was just like, well, what am I going to do with it? There's
right,
a reason
exactly
I got
right.
this, so what am I going to do to make it happen? And
exactly
I think, you know,
right.
we sit there and go, well, it wasn't my fault. Okay, well, take responsibility for the situation. It's still your life.
And that leads me to my next question, because I've heard you say this, and I think I've read that you say this somewhere. You need to get intimate with fear. And when somebody does lose their job or their marriage is on, and that's another thing. When everything goes south, it seems like your marriage goes right along with it.
No, man.
What do you do? How do you just kind of dive into it and say, look, I'm fearful. I'm going to look at my fear instead of, oh, gosh, I'm going to go drink a bottle of vodka, and I'll come back to this later. So,
you know, maybe a glass of vodka. No,
well, I don't know about that.
You know,
maybe
or a glass
topical.
Of wine, maybe, you know, at the end of the day. But,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's a great question. And I think that we see fear as a bad thing. And, you know, we've been taught to view fear as something to be avoided. And I look at it a little differently. I look at fear as something to be embraced. And and that's why I say get intimate with fear, because here's the thing. Fear is, and we mistake, and Seth Godin's got a great thing on this, is, you know, real fear versus imagined fear, and, you know, the oblongata or whatever that thing is in the back of your head. I can't pronounce it.
The hobgoblin?
But it's something like that. And it's basically this part of our brain that is the fight or flight part of our brain. And it's an instinctual thing. And what happens is when we get in situations that are uncomfortable, that fight or flight mechanism sometimes overreacts. And there's a very fine line, actually, between fear and excitement. Like, if you've ever noticed, with the night before something that's actually kind of exciting to you, you kind of have butterflies. And you're like, wow, I can't wait for this to happen. If you think about it, that's almost the exact same feeling that you get when you're afraid of something. When you have that fear that we go, oh, I'm afraid. And all it really is just a perception. It's the exact same feeling, and it's just how you perceive that feeling based off of what's on the other side of it or what action has to be taken. So if it's something where it's like, oh, man, I'm going, you know, skydiving tomorrow, it's kind of this thrill of exciting, you know, I'm you know, a little nervous, but I'm kind of fun, I'm excited. You know, so we chalk that up to being maybe a little bit more on the excited category. But if it's something where it's like, man, I've got to, you know, do something where I've got to have a hard conversation with somebody, we get the same feeling because we're not excited about it. We go, that's fear. So therefore, maybe I won't have that feeling or have that conversation. And so what I tell people is I say, look, get intimate with fear, because what happens is the more you start to grow, the more you start to stretch, what you start realizing is that fear comes along with the game, and it actually becomes kind of a great guidepost of what you should be doing, not of what you shouldn't be doing. Because most people go, oh, well, I'm not going to do it because I'm afraid, therefore maybe I shouldn't be doing it. Maybe that's my subconscious or my gut telling me that I shouldn't do it. And I look at it and go, wait a minute, if it's something that freaks you out, it's probably something that you should be doing. 9 times out of 10, I will tell you, if something makes me like, you know, man, it's going to stretch me, I'm afraid I might fail, I'm afraid I might not make it, I'm afraid that, you know, 9 times out of 10 is something I really ought to be doing, because it means I'm going to be stepping outside of my comfort zone, and I can use it as a signpost. If I've got 2 options and one of them scares me to death, I've got 2 roads that kind of diverge in front of me. One of them I look down and go, oh, it's kind of freaky, it's kind of scary, it's going to be difficult, it's going to be hard, I might fail. And the other one I look down and go, wow, I can kind of coast. I'll tell you the one I ought to be taking. I'd like to say that I always do it. I'd like to say that I always go down the road that scares me, and I don't. But I will tell you that the majority of the time I've gotten capable of doing that now. And the reason is because I realized that fear is a signpost along the road of life saying, get out of your comfort zone. Step out of that bubble that you've created, that safety bubble. You know, it's like that movie Bubble Boy, you know, the kid rocking around in a plastic bubble who just couldn't, you know. And it's, you know, we get to this point where we go, oh, I'm just so comfortable. Fear is a bad thing. And I go, no, what happens is everybody wants to be thought of as being courageous. You know, if you go, oh, do you want to be thought of, like, at the end of your life, do you want people to go, man, that was a guy or a gal who really took risks and they were courageous? And you go, yeah. The person always goes, yeah. And you go, great, do something that scares you. And they go, no. You know, and it's like, and the reality is there is no courage without fear. You can't be a courageous person if you don't do something that scares you. So where there is no fear, there's no courage. So if you want to be thought of as a courageous person, you want to be thought of as somebody who took risks, get comfortable being afraid. Get comfortable with that feeling of borderline excitement. Am I afraid, or is it just I'm kind of nervous about it? And you know, I hear people go, well, I'm not afraid of failing. I'm afraid of success. And I look at it and go, it's the same. It's different sides of the same coin.
It's the same energy, isn't it? I mean, they're both the same kind of energy. One is going to get you in trouble. The other one is going to, you know, energize you.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the thing is if you're, people always go, well, you know, so when I coach people, I go, okay, are you afraid of failing? And most people never want to admit that they're afraid of failing.
Right.
So they somehow think that admitting that they're afraid of succeeding is better. And I go, well, why are you afraid of succeeding? And the reality is they don't know. They go, I'm not really sure. And I'm like, is it because you're not sure you can keep it at that level when you get it, that you'll get it and lose it? Yeah,
good
so you're afraid of failing at succeeding. So you're afraid of getting to a level and then failing to maintain that level. There's really no fear of success. It's a big, like, psychobabble thing that, you know, people have come up with that sounds like, well, I'm not afraid of failing. You're like, only cowards are afraid of failing. I'm afraid of success. Like, I might just do it and pull it off, and then what? And the reality is they might pull it off and, let's say, reach that next level, but then not be able to maintain that level. They're afraid of actually being able to maintain that level and failing at that, so they just call it fear of success. But it's really the same thing. People just find something to chalk it up to and go, well, I'm afraid of failing, I'm afraid of success, I'm afraid of, you know, what people might think about me, I'm afraid of this. And the reality is those are just excuses. At the end of the day, you're just not comfortable with that feeling and acting in spite of that feeling. And the feeling of fear doesn't go away before you take action. And I think too many people wait until they go, well, when the butterflies go away, when that nervous energy goes away, when that fear, whatever you want to call it, goes away, then I'll take action. The problem is it doesn't go away on the front side of action. It only goes away after you've taken action. Here's a great example of this. How many people in the audience have learned how to jump off of, let's say, a diving board? Or, you know, and they were kids or have watched a kid learn for the first time how to jump off of a diving board or the edge of the pool even, which is like 3 inches above the water. You know, and they're sitting there and they're nervous and their parents are in the water, you know, going, come on, Johnny, jump, you're okay. And they got their arms outstretched, like the safest place in the world in that pool. And the kid can't realize it. We all realize it because we're on the other side of that jump, but he's on the front side of that jump. And on the front side of that jump, he's nervous, he's afraid, he's scared, he's not sure, he's not confident because he hasn't taken that leap. If he were to wait until that feeling went away, he would never jump. But the minute he jumps and the minute he realizes that it turned out okay, guess what? He runs out of the pool and he's like, again, Dad. And then
again,
he jumps.
Right.
And then he's like, again, Dad. And then he jumps. And then what happens is all of a sudden the height gets a little bit bigger. So Dad goes, okay, let's move it up to the step, you know, let's move it up to this next level or to the diving board. Well, what happens when he gets up to the diving board? Whoa, it's a little bit bigger. The height's a little bit bigger. So there's that feeling again. And so now he's got to overcome that feeling at that level because he's outside of his comfort zone. He was comfortable on the edge of the pool. And once he did it, he was like, nothing to be scared of. Now he goes up 3 feet, and he's like, oh, my gosh, all of a sudden there's something to be scared of. So he's standing on the edge of the diving board going, I don't know if I can do it. And Dad's going, you just did it. Like, come on. You know, it's only 3 feet. It's not going to kill you. I'm right here. And it still takes the kid a couple minutes to get over it. But once he's done it, guess what? Runs out of the pool, gets back on that diving board. He's like, I've got it, Dad. And he jumps in the pool by himself. Now put the kid on a 10-foot rock. Where's that feeling again? Oh, whoa, you know, now I'm afraid again. And so that's what happens is every time we step outside of our comfort zone, we get to a ledge that's a little bit higher, a little bit taller, and the perspective changes. We go, whew, the view from this height is making me uncomfortable. I've got that energy, and we call it fear, and we go, well, I'm going to wait until the fear goes away, then I'll jump. And the reality is it's not until after you jump that fear goes away and that you can actually be on the other side of it going, oh, it all worked out. Now I can keep working at this level just fine. And when I get to the next level, what you have to do is you have to remember back to those previous levels to be able to say, wait a minute. I've been here before. I've experienced this feeling before, and all it took was for me to take action.
So this goes right back to what we were talking about at the top of the show, where you need to focus less on what you're doing, say jumping off the diving board, and what you're going to become, which is a person who can jump off a taller diving board.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, and most people think that they're going to go from, hey, I just learned to jump off the side of the pool and learned how to swim, to I'm going to go jump off a 10-foot rock. And
right.
What it is that life is, you have to build up in stages. You don't go from 0 to 100, you know, without passing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You got to pass all those other numbers. And you can skip some of them. Like, you don't have to go, okay, I'm going to jump off a 1-inch ledge, then a 2-inch ledge, then a, you know. You don't have to do it that way. You can move up, but what I always encourage people to do is to build. So if you're not the type of person who can jump off a 3-foot ledge, don't try and jump off a 10-foot ledge.
Good point. I wouldn't do it. I don't swim. But yeah, I absolutely understand what you're talking about. I can't swim. I say I don't swim.
Yeah.
Because I don't like that word can't.
No, and I think that's a great point. I mean, we set our beliefs set the boundaries of our lives.
Right.
So if I believe that I can't do something, guess what? I can't.
Guess what? You can't. That's right.
Yeah,
and I tell that to people all the time. You just shot yourself in the foot. What's up? You know, you want to go have lunch because you're done.
Yeah. You can't outlive your beliefs. You can't live outside of what you believe about yourself or about the world or about anything. So, for example, if I'm driving down the road and I believe that nobody stops at red lights, that's my belief, is that nobody stops at red lights, and I see that I've got a green light, but I know that people have red lights on the other side, and I believe that nobody stops at red lights, guess what I'm going to do when I get to that intersection? Stop.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
Creep and crawl through.
Because and annoy the heck out of the other drivers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't outlive your beliefs. You can't live outside your beliefs. They set the boundaries of your life. So what are you going to believe about yourself? What are you going to believe about the world, about what it is that you're going to do?
Excellent. You know what, Travis? You say something that I think is fascinating, and I get a big kick out of it every time it pops up. You tell people not to chase pink tutus unless you love to dance. I love that.
Yeah, and people always look at me weird. They're like, how many pink tutus dancing, what? And so...
and are there pictures? I do want to know.
No. I'm not a dancer, and I've never worn a pink tutu.
Okay, I thought we'd get that one out of the way.
Is, you know, when we're in business or when we're in life even, I mean, even if you don't own a business, and I'm sure there are people in your audience who are maybe thinking about starting a business and they're not sure where to go yet, and they've got opportunities and they've got different things. Here's what happens is the more success you start to get, the more opportunities people will bring to you. And what happens is it can be really, really distracting. And if you're an entrepreneur, I mean, you have an idea every minute of the day that you could potentially implement on, and you're mm-hmm. like, I have this great idea. And I always joke that one day I'm going to write a book like A Million and One Ways to Make $1,000,000, because I feel like I have a million-dollar idea every single minute. And so it's, you know, I just want to put them in a book and go, here, these aren't for me, but maybe they're for somebody else. I don't know. And it, because I feel like I've got to be good, number one, at saying no to myself and going,
right.
Yeah, that may be a great idea for somebody else. And the way this all came up is we were doing a family barbecue. And my brother-in-law, who I love dearly, he's a great guy. He's involved in a small business type of thing, and he, you know, it's a multi-level marketing network, not multi-level marketing, sorry, it's network marketing, different than MLMs, but mm-hmm. similar types of concepts. You know, it's built on recruiting people into your business and different things like that. And I'm fine. I know a lot of people who are great at network marketing, and I think it can be a great system and a great platform for some people to build businesses. And so I'm not knocking anybody who's in that, by the way. But what was happening is he was really getting a bit on the obnoxious aggressive side with me.
Mm.
And we were talking about it, and he goes, well, you know, I think you'd be great at it. And I'm like, maybe I would, but Brian, I've got three businesses that I'm currently running. Like, I really don't need to add another business onto my plate right now. And it's not for me. And he goes, well, if you could make $1 million selling pink tutus, would you do it? I said, not unless I love to dance. And
there
he goes,
you go.
What do you mean? He goes, what do you mean? I was like, do you realize that there's somebody out there who loves to dance, who maybe couldn't make it as a professional dancer, but what they want to do is they want to help little girls and little boys who want to wear pink tutus all around the world, you know, get their pink tutus so that they can dance, that they can love to dance, and that they have a passion for dancing themselves, and they have a passion for making the best pink tutus in the world. And I tell you what, they're going to crush me in the pink tutu making competition of business. And because I don't love pink tutus, I don't love to dance, I can look at it and go, oh, I'm going to make $1 million selling pink tutus. But the reality is, when the going gets difficult, when the business gets hard, when challenges come up, when, you know, because look, if you want more time to yourself and more time to your family, don't start a business. Don't start
no
a business
kidding.
Because I know so many people that go, oh, I'm going to start a business because I want more independence and more freedom and more time for my family. It's like, yeah, just keep your day job. If that's your reason for starting a business, I'll tell you what, it's a big myth that you can mm-hmm. do this on a beach and, you know, sipping Mai Tais. Not going to happen. And,
yep.
and so, you know, the growing a business takes work. It takes hard work. It takes nights, weekends, sweat, tears, blood. And you know what? When 3 a.m. comes around and I'm trying to grow my pink tutu $1 million business, and I hate pink tutus, and I hate the sight of pink, and I hate dancing, and I hate the fact that I'm up at 3 a.m., that I haven't seen my family in 2 days, that I'm trying to grow this stupid pink tutu business to $1 million, and there's somebody else at 3 a.m. going, you know what, I may not want to be here, but I love what I do, and I love pink tutus, and I know that this is part of the business, and I know that this is something I have to do to grow my pink tutu business. Guess who's going to win? If we're
the
both up at 3 a.m., I'm gonna throw in that stupid pink tutu towel, and I'm going to say, I'm done. And they're going to be slugging along, and they're going to break through those barriers much faster than I am, and they're going to dominate the pink tutu market. Me, I'm going to get crushed. Why am I going to go do something that I don't love to do for the money? Again, that's where it gets back to, are you chasing the money,
yeah.
or are you chasing something that's going to make you come alive, that's going to make you passionate, that's going to make you fulfilled?
And creative. I mean, if you're working in the pink tutu business and you don't want to be there, your mind is not making that leap ahead. Well, look, we can add sequins to this one. This one, you know what? We can make
yeah.
little ballerina shoes that go with this one. Oh, and we can put these on Build-A-Bears. I mean, you know, your brain is on fire when you love what you do. When you're doing something you just detest, you just do it and get out of there. And that doesn't work. It really does not work.
Yeah. yeah. And
no,
I never would have thought of Build-A-Bear. I never would have thought of sequins because I never use the word. I never say,
me
no,
either.
You know, those sequins are really nice.
Yeah, me either.
So I'm not the right person to be in the pink tutu business. And so I always encourage people, just because you get opportunities doesn't mean you need to go down them. And you've got to have some perspective on, you know, at some point, you know, this is where I start to say, look, early on, focus on who you're becoming, not what you're doing. And then as you start
mm-hmm.
to get a vision for what it is that you're going to be doing, don't deviate from it. Just because you
yeah.
have a good opportunity doesn't mean you need to take every good opportunity that comes along. I say no to more opportunities than I probably say yes to right now.
Yeah, I've had that same conversation with clients, and they'll say, "Oh, yeah, but this is, you know, this person is so famous, and this is so good, and but I don't have time." Well,
yeah.
You need to look at it. I mean, is it really in keeping with, you know, what your goals are, where you're going, with your personal beliefs? There's so many things to look at. You're right. You shouldn't swat at every opportunity that comes along, because a lot of times the opportunity is going to help the other person. It really may not be anything good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kind
I've got one right now that I'm looking at. It's a joint venture with a guy, or a potential partnership with a guy who I deeply respect and who's just wildly successful in my industry. And so we're in talks right now about, is there a way for us to work together? And I have to be very, very careful, because it could easily become something that I don't want it to be. And I have to be very guarded. I have to be very careful, open to things and excited about it, and coming up with ways that we could work together that I'd be comfortable with that would benefit both of our businesses. But if it moves too far one direction, I've got to be willing to walk away from it, even though it's a quote-unquote great opportunity. And even as, I mean, look, there are so many things he could offer me that would be great opportunities on the surface, but they wouldn't be where I want to take my business and where I want to take my company. So I have to know where that line is, and where if it crosses that line, it may be a great opportunity, but it's not the right opportunity.
I agree, and I see that a lot. And here's the thing, too. Once, and I've noticed this in my own life, in my own business, once you start getting to that point in your business where, you know, you're stretching and you're growing, but you're pretty well where you wanted to be when you started out, but now you're growing and layering, those opportunities seem to come in the middle of the night. I mean, you'll open up your email and go, what? Okay, wow. And they just kind of come out of what seems to be nowhere. But the truth is, you built those opportunities. You attracted those opportunities with the body of your work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And as you gain success and as you start, people want to attach themselves to you as you start to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to be a part of your success. And on some levels, that can be good if you're hiring a team. On other levels, that can be bad if people are just approaching you with idea after idea after idea. I mean, yesterday on Twitter, I was getting pitched for different things, and it's like, no, I'm good, thank you. Well, no, I really think you'd be good at it. No, I'm good, thank you. Like, I already said no, I'm not going to respond again. And so, you know, those are the opportunities that are a lot easier to turn down than this other one that I'm considering, which is a big opportunity, and I have to, but I still have to look at it. He approached me about it, and it was flattering, it was honoring, and I had to say, look, I'm honored that somebody of your caliber is looking at me saying, you know, let's figure out a way to work together. So give me some time to think about this, because just because it's a huge honor, just because I'm flattered, doesn't mean it's the right decision.
Right. And, you know, once you cogitate on it for a while, here's what I do, Travis. I'm giving you my business secret. When I have a question like that, which is pretty much every day, I mean, not on that magnitude, but there's always something that I can't puzzle it out, or I was too busy during the day to puzzle it out or come up with an answer that I liked, I will literally turn it over to my subconscious for review when I go to sleep. And, I mean, I'm telling you, I wake up at 3:18 every morning and go, oh, there it is. And
yeah.
I'm off and running. So
yeah,
it works
yeah.
for me. It may work for, I know a lot of people that works, right? Just relax, calm, and just turn it over to your interior brain and let it take over and see what answers you come up with.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. It's like sometimes we have our best ideas where? In the shower. Why?
In
because
the shower or when you're waking.
Anything.
Yep, yep. Exactly.
Yeah, we're not thinking about it. We're just kind of like, we're kind of disengaged from the problem. And so our brain is actually able to work and able to kind of function and able to process through things and then to be kind of bring an idea to the surface.
Look,
it's a fascinating way our brains are wired.
I know. My think tank is my bathtub. You know, I get in there with my Kindle and, you know, my big glass of water and, you know, cats lined up on the side of the bathtub. And I have learned that I have to take a little mini recorder into the bathtub with me, because I'll be reading or relaxing and all of a sudden I'm, oh! And I, you know, you can't have a notepad and your hands are wet. So So I've got a little recorder sitting up on the ledge, and I work in the bathtub, but I'm really not. I'm just being very, very creative. Now, here's my thing about the shower, though. The minute they come up with a waterproof Kindle, I will be in heaven.
You'll be all over it. Well, you
I'll be the first one in line for that.
I'll tell you what a buddy of mine did, because he was going on a – he lives in Florida, and he basically – put his Kindle in. He was going on a so they were going out on a boat and just hanging out for the day, and he wanted to make sure that, you know, his Kindle didn't get wet, so he just put in two Ziploc bags. He double bagged it, and he could still read it.
I wish you hadn't told me that.
And it worked. I actually asked him afterwards, because he was like, so how'd your waterproof Kindle work? And he goes, great, it was fun. He goes, I even dropped it in the water to see. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah.
Oh, no. It probably floated. You know what, Travis? We ran out of time. I mean, this hour went so fast. It did, and I would love to have you come back, because, honestly, I've got a whole page of things that I wanted to talk with you about.
Well, I talk a lot, so I talk for a living, so it can be challenging sometimes to get me to shut up.
I would love to have you back,
because I get going. So I would love to. It'd be fun.
Oh, thank you. Well, listen, tell people one more time. The streaming has stopped, but we're still recording. So tell our audience where they can find you. And I know you've got a free ebook, I believe it is, or a report on your website.
Yeah, you can go to travisrobertson.com, and I've got a free report up there, kind of ebook. It's actually a workbook. Report's not the right word. Ebook's not the right word. It's really a workbook, and it's designed to help people kind of develop what I call a training mindset. And this is that idea that you're going to train for what it is that you want. You know, the best athletes in the world, they don't just go out and try something, they train for it. They don't, you know, go, oh, there's a marathon down the street, I think I'm going to go try and run it, even though I've been a couch potato for the last 10 years. They actually train to run that marathon, and I think more often than not in life, we have to start developing that training mindset, that idea of saying, wait, that's focusing on who you're becoming, by the way, and saying, okay, what is it that I want to do? Who is it that I want to become? And how can I start training myself to do that a little bit every day to become a little bit better and a little bit more capable of taking on a little bit more? And so I've put together this workbook. It's some of the exercises that I walk through with my clients and that I've walked through myself to grow and to develop. And so I've put it together in a quick workbook, and there's a little offer in there for people that make at least an attempt at doing it. You can get on the phone with me and get a little coaching session out of it if you complete the exercises in the workbook. Just my way of saying great and congratulations. So let's hop on the phone and talk about it and see how I can help you for 30 minutes or an hour.
I downloaded it yesterday, so you will be getting a call from me.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. And you know what? If you're comfortable, maybe we could just record it and give it out to your audience.
You know, I would love to do that. I
you know,
think that's an absolutely brilliant idea. I would.
Depends on what you
want
to talk to. So,
I'm sorry?
It'd be a fun thing. Depending on if you're comfortable, whatever you want to talk about. So it's they're always available to be private. You know, they're not something that get published. So, but I do like to give people at least a recording of their call, and then it's up to you what you want to do with it.
I think that would be a great idea. Well, Travis, thank you so much for being with me here today. I mean, I had a ball. I learned a lot of new things, and I know our audience did as well, and I would love to have you come back soon. We'll get that set up pretty soon. But everybody, thank you for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and Travis Robertson wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week. Thank you, Travis.
Thank you, Denise, and thank you, everybody. Had a blast. Thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.